Theodore Bent's Evergreen, or perhaps Everblue is better, Guide to the Greek Cycladic Islands, was first published by Longmans, Green & Co. in London on the 28th of February, 1885. The Cyclades, or Life Among the Insular Greeks, was the first such travelogue to be published in English and has remained a firm favourite and a great read for nearly a century and a half. To mark the 140th anniversary of its publication, the Bent Archive has invited friends of the Cyclades, archaeologists, anthropologists, travel writers, to read extracts from their favourite islands, which we hope everyone will enjoy. What follows now is a reading of Bent's preface to the first edition. Listen out at the end for a reference to the assistant the Bents hired for their trip. This man is the long-suffering Matthew Seamos from Anafi, a Cycladic islander, born in 1847, the same year as Mabel Bent, and who was with the celebrity explorers on their final trip to southern Arabia more than 15 years later, the trip that resulted in Bent's early death at the age of just 45 in 1897. The islands of the Aegean Sea offer plenty of scope for the study of Hellenic archaeology, but they are more particularly rich in the preservation of manners and customs which have survived the lapse of years, and the result of a special study of both these points, made during two winters, passed by my wife and myself amongst the islanders in their distant hamlets, in their towns by the seacoast, I here place before the public. The causes which have conduced to making the Cyclades a favourable field for the study of Hellenic folklore are these. First, the islands were never, like the mainland, subject to the incursions of barbarous tribes. This fact is especially noticeable in the island of Andros, the most northern and the most accessible of the Cycladic group from the mainland, by way of Evia. The northern portion of this island is exclusively Albanian in speech, manners and customs. The Greeks in the south are highly influenced by this intermixture, which has in a measure destroyed the identity of the continental Greeks. But here the Albanian wave has ended. There is not a trace of it in any other of the Cyclades. Secondly, the Italian influence, which was dominant in the Middle Ages in the Cyclades, has left traces which extend little beyond the towns on the seacoast. The Latin rule seems to have been a mild one, but unpopular amongst the Greeks. Religious feeling between East and West ran high, and each party throughout retained their customs and their cult. At Naxos, for example, there are still existing many families of Italian origin who retain their religion. They reside almost exclusively in the chief town. The sailors in their dialect have quantities of Italian words, but up in the mountains of Naxos, an hour's distance from the town, the villages are inhabited by Greeks of the most undoubted pedigree. It is the same at Santorin, where the Italian influence was equally pronounced. If you leave the towns and go into the villages, you find customs existing, the very nature of which stamps them as Hellenic. Thirdly, during Turkish times, the Cyclades were hardly ever interfered with, and if they annually sent their tribute to the Captain Pasha, when he anchored off Cape Drio, Paros, to collect the revenues, the islanders were practically allowed self-government. It was not so with the Sporades, far more productive and easier of access. Chios, Lesvos, Samos and others are perfect gardens as compared with the Cyclades. And to the smaller islands of the Cycladic group, such as Ios, Sikinos, Folegandros, some of which appear to have been uninhabited, or nearly so, during Latin rule, refugees came and settled about this time from all parts of Greece. The Cretans, the Peloponnesians, and people from Asia Minor, to escape Turkish tyranny, built walled villages up on the hills to protect themselves from pirates, and there they have maintained their customs undisturbed ever since. From these facts, it will be obvious that these islands, especially the smaller ones, offer unusual facilities for the study of the manners and customs of the Greeks as they are, with a view to comparing them with those of the Greeks as they were. The mainland of Greece has been overrun by barbaric tribes. The Ionian Islands have been thoroughly Italianized. Greece in Asia Minor and the islands adjacent to the coast have been swamped in Islamism. Yet the Cyclades have remained more or less as they were, thanks to their insignificance and unproductive soil. I did not find much literature to assist me in my researches. Turnfour's Travels in the East was a pleasant companion, adducing quaint historical facts and showing us what the islands were like at the end of the 17th century. Ludwig Ross, in his Inselreisen, guides the traveller to the principal points of antiquity, which were discovered 50 years ago. Bernard Schmidt's Volksleben der Neugriechen formed an excellent basis on which to start inquiries about the manners and customs. But as his material was chiefly culled from the Ionian Islands and the mainland, I found a vast difference existing between the customs he has collected and those of the Cyclades. Von Hahn's collection of fables, Wachsmuth's work on Greek folklore, and one or two others of minor importance, I found very useful for suggesting remarks, and these invariably provoked a discussion whence the genuine local customs were learnt. But personal intercourse with the islanders in all grades of society, at their work and at their board, proved to us the most infallible method of understanding their life and their superstitions as they exist today. And the kindly hospitality with which they received us, and the surprise they evinced at seeing for the first time amongst them an English lady, will remain forever fixed on our memories. My first experiences were made with the assistance of a dragoman, but on better acquaintance with the language, I learnt to despise his services, and took a servant, a native of one of the islands, who became invaluable in assisting me to discover points of folklore which, without him, it would have been impossible to arrive at. J. Theodore Bent, 13 Great Cumberland Place, London, West, November 1884.